In 2022, the Biden administration committed more than $19 billion in military aid to Ukraine. It's set to give Ukraine another $45 billion in 2023. Washington is now seeking to deliver Patriot missile systems to Ukraine. The U.S. is now set to train scores of Ukrainian troops on how to deploy and maintain the American Patriot missile systems.
The training will prepare approximately 90 to 100 Ukrainian soldiers to operate, maintain, and sustain the defensive system over a training course expected to last several months. And once fielded, the Patriot will continue to contribute to Ukraine's air defense capabilities and provide another capability to the Ukrainian people to defend themselves against Russia's ongoing aerial assaults.
The Kremlin has said the systems and any crews accompanying them would be legitimate priority targets for the Russian military. The U.S. is now contemplating delivering Stryker armored vehicles to Ukraine as part of a new Pentagon shipment. Furthermore, the U.K. announced that it would provide Ukraine with main battle tanks, and Poland said it would transfer a company of Leopard 2 Panzers to Kiev. Germany has, however, to greenlight Poland's re-export of the hardware. Germany says it will follow the U.S. President Joe Biden's lead on whether to support Kiev with Leopard 2 main battle tanks. Germany has faced mounting pressure to provide Ukraine with Leopard 2 tanks, but has been reluctant to do so. Russia has repeatedly warned Western countries against sending arms to Ukraine. Russia has repeatedly warned the West against flooding Ukraine with weapons. It insists that sending more weapons to Ukraine will only prolong the war, while prompting the Kiev forces to kill civilians in the pro-Moscow regions.
Police in Brazil have detained some 1,500 supporters of former President Jair Bolsonaro over attacks on government buildings at the weekend, as calls for justice and accountability grow across the South American nation. Most of the former far-right leader's backers were detained when law enforcement forces dismantled a protest camp in the capital, Brasilia, which many demonstrators set off from on Sunday before breaking into Congress, the Supreme Court, and the presidential palace. The administration of Brazil's new left-wing president, Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, who was officially sworn in on January 1st, has pledged to investigate those behind the violence and hold them to account. Supreme Court Justice Alexandre de Moraes, who is running investigations of the anti-democratic protests, vowed in a speech on Tuesday to combat what he called the terrorists at work in Brasilia. Rioters broke windows, toppled furniture, and hurled computers and printers to the ground as they ransacked the government buildings on Sunday. They destroyed precious works of art, overturned the U-shaped table where Supreme Court justices convene, ripped a door off one justice's office, and vandalized a statue outside the court. Lula denounced what he called far-right acts of terrorism as he met the leaders of both houses of Congress and the head of the Supreme Court. He had also blamed Bolsonaro for instigating his supporters after a campaign of baseless allegations about the October election results. Lula has vowed to bring to justice those responsible for what he called the fascist assault and declared federal intervention in public security in the capital lasting until January 31st. The riot came after Lula, who previously served as Brazil's president from 2003 to 2010, narrowly defeated Bolsonaro in a hard-fought presidential election runoff on October 30th. Bolsonaro is a former army captain who has expressed admiration for the military regime that ruled Brazil from 1964 to 1985. For months, he had falsely claimed the country's electronic voting system was vulnerable to fraud. Sunday's riot in Brasilia also drew parallels to the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol, which saw a mob of former President Donald Trump's supporters storm the legislature in an effort to stop Congress from certifying his successor Joe Biden's election victory. Brazilian police were noticeably slow to react to the riot in Brasilia, even after the arrival of more than 100 buses, leading many to question whether authorities had either simply ignored numerous warnings, underestimated the protesters' strength, or been somehow complicit. Prosecutors in the capital said local security forces were negligent at the very least. In Brazil's capital on Sunday, thousands of protesters attacked government institutions in a dangerous echo of the United States' January 6 insurrection. Bolsonaro, dubbed as Tropical Trump, has questioned the credibility of the country's electronic voting system without providing evidence. Lula was sworn in on January 1st, unleashing a barrage of rebuke against Bolsonaro for what he called his predecessor's mishandling of Brazil's affairs during his mandate. There have been claims of the CIA involvement in what is seen as a failed coup in Brazil. If true, why would the CIA attempt to do so? To be sure, the CIA does have a long track record of staging coups in Latin America, but it has done so with the intent of dismantling leftist governments and installing far-right regimes. Brazil is set to reassert itself in global geopolitics alongside fellow BRICS states, Russia, India, and China. Lula at the helm in Brazil, in what is now his third non-successive presidential term, will offer a tremendous boost to BRICS. In the 2000s, Lula was a key conceptualizer of a deeper role for BRICS, including trade in their own currencies. The U.S. is being slowly but surely expelled from wider Eurasia by concerted actions of the Russia-China strategic partnership. Ukraine is a black hole, where NATO faces a humiliation similar to what the U.S. faced in Afghanistan, a feeble EU being forced by Washington to deindustrialize and buy U.S. liquefied natural gas at absurdly high cost as no essential resources for the empire to plunder. Geoeconomically, that leaves the U.S.-denominated Western Hemisphere, especially immense energy-rich Venezuela, as the key target. And geopolitically, the key region actor is Brazil. The U.S. would seemingly try to pull all stops to prevent Chinese and Russian trade expansion and political influence in Latin America, which Washington, irrespective of international law and the concept of sovereignty, continues to call its backyard.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope. Toward the peak. On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam I be. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم everyone. Welcome back to your home. This is Youth Station. I am Asma and I have here with me.
Yeah, I'm Rita and my pleasure to be here with you.
Of course, it's always a pleasure to be here and to share this table with you.
Thank you.
So, Rita, how are you doing?
It's going well. Thank you.
There are a lot of things that are ugly in this life.
Exactly.
But they happen.
The topic of today is the story of, I don't know, tragedy.
Yeah, it's not a tragedy. Well, tragedies are beautiful, but these things, you know, I guess when something comes out of ignorance or, let's say, not being fully aware of the consequences of the acts
of
that you
doing.
Do,
exactly.
It's not going to be called tragedy. It's going to be called a mistake of your life.
When it comes to a big disaster, that it is not the mistake of your life.
Mm-hmm.
It's somebody else's life.
Yeah, of course. See, Bita, we read so much of articles and we hear it even.
Yeah.
That because it has been something which is very common everywhere. Of course, in Muslim countries, it is less heard about. But in other countries... in which religion does not have a main role and is not playing a great role in society, we could see a lot of that. The unwanted children that are going to be coming into this world.
In young ages.
Yeah, in very young ages.
Even telling the name is somehow a burden on my shoulder,
Yeah, of course.
Because it's so sad and dramatic.
Just imagine a girl of 15 years old is going to face such a big responsibility.
And the problem is that there's responsibilities on her shoulder.
Of course.
Not the boy, even sometimes, that boy will run away.
Of course. What because you that do? Boy, again, Bita, is too young.
Yeah, exactly. You know, see, they are not ready to.
When a girl is 15,
yeah,
she can understand. As I'm now, this is my personal perspective. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying it based on a factual knowledge.
Yeah.
My perspective of girls is that they are years before their age, you know? Yeah. I mean, they understand things deeply more than boys. I do not mean that all the boys are just like
no,
this.
I'm
just saying
you.
That girls would get to maturity before the boys.
Yeah.
And a boy in the age of 15 is going to be immature, is going to be carefree, and is going to... if he actually is not going to understand what is going around him.
I understand you. And unfortunately, you know, these rates that we have, the statistics that we can see in... every kind of country, especially non-Islamic countries, because they just don't go through the rules of religion or ethical rules, you know. And I want to tell you a dramatic statistic, which really, you know, can be heartbroken.
Of course, yes.
From every 10 girls under 20 years old in United States, three of them will go through these tragedy. I don't want to use this word, but yeah,
through
tragedy
this dilemma, of course.
Yeah, exactly, of unwanted children. Pregnancy.
And just imagine what would happen to the girl and also to the child,
baby,
to the poor baby that is going
and
to come
point
into this
is the
world.
Baby, because most of these people will go and because you know they have some financial problems in their own hometowns, they cannot afford facilities for that baby, and the baby will go to orphanage.
Of course,
and
yeah.
This is a disaster.
Yeah, this is so painful, of course. And just imagine if that poor child is a girl.
Yeah.
So now the society is considering her as an unwanted thing as well.
Exactly.
Because she's not going to have a father to back her up.
Even no mother, no family, nothing, no education, no facility. And what is this life? Let's keep all this grief here.
Yeah.
And go for a break. Then we're going to come back.
Of course, yes. Youth Station, Bita and I are talking about something very much painful, but we have to talk about it because we need to share the understanding, the education, the whatever thing, the awareness, let's call it this way, is better, I guess. We have to have an awareness and we have to teach our daughters and even the sons about these sort of things.
Yeah.
In countries that are not Islamic, well, the children will be together at a school. And just imagine they spend half of their day with their classmates. And those classmates are of other genders, of course.
Also, there were a kind of a research in this issue in the United States, which told us when they make these kind of schools, which were mixed genders, apartheid, the function of the students developed.
Yeah.
And this is a beautiful fact, actually, because you can see that...
because there's no more of distractions, and it's very logical.
This is a big distraction for their age. You know?
Yeah, for their age.
And, you know, we cannot blame anyone for that, because this is the nature of human beings.
Yeah.
We have some needs in ourselves, we have some loss or something that, you know, there should be answered, and there is answer, but in an appropriate way, in an appropriate age, but unfortunately...
In a responsible way, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Ethical way.
Ethical way.
But, you know, when it comes to school, I don't know, even elementary school or something, it will become a disaster.
Yeah, it will become a disaster, specifically because there are kids and they do not have any vision of their future and their any perspective of what is going to happen to them in future.
They're not mature.
Yeah.
You know, they don't have an understanding of responsibility.
So maybe one of the ways that we could do in order to ignore these situations to happen is to think more about the educational environment.
I do agree with that. I think we have to share the information, I don't know, about this issue to all the people, especially teenagers at a school, from, I don't know, teachers, the other people at a school, mm-hmm. and also family.
Yeah,
is
family.
One of the, I don't know, key points of this issue of education. about this matter.
So, you know, I always think about it as a mother who's mm-hmm. living in a non-Islamic country.
Yeah.
Should you teach your daughter to be more careful about her relationship with her classmates?
Of course. This is your responsibility, in my opinion. You have to teach them. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is no shoot or something like that. There is have to.
Yeah.
There is an obligation here. Because no matter where you are, whether it is Islamic or it's not, still there exist some ethical issues, and still there is the nature of human beings.
You know why I say non-Islamic? Because yeah. in Islamic countries, like our country, Iran, yeah. well, the classes are separated from each
exactly.
other. So the girls and boys can sit in their own class and then study without thinking about other distractions.
But still, I think we need education even in that situation.
Yeah, even in that situation, because in the modern age, there's no way to control, you know, you cannot be always there for your children
technology
and support
is
them
enough
everywhere. Yes, technology
to learn
is
everything.
Enough. Technology is taking all the terrible and
exactly.
Making everything available for all the children.
And also, I think this is one of the main root problems in this issue, that because technology and virtual world, the connection between, I don't know, the other gender is really easier.
Yeah.
You know? And because you don't see that person, you feel more comfortable.
So see, let's say it from the very
yeah.
Of course, the middle of our discussion,
no.
let's say it right in here, that there is no deny over the fact that boys and girls are attracted to each other.
It is because of their nature.
Yeah,
and their...
it is something that exists in their nature, and intuitively they feel so happy when they sit together, when they talk together, when they share their information together.
This is their physical response, you know,
yeah,
hormones
yeah.
and so on.
All the hormonal things
and
are
chemicals.
In work, and all the attraction thing that I'm just
yeah.
telling you, and the happiness that is going to be created by just sharing your information with another person of other gender, who's going to have another perspective different from yours,
exactly.
of course, is going to be something interesting for them. But sometimes they don't. Of course, not sometimes. Most of the times, they do not have any idea about the consequences that is going to happen if they go further in their relationship.
And they go, you know, because
yeah.
there is no red line here.
Yeah.
Because you are in a kind of, I don't know, a kind of beach which there is no horizon. You will go and walk and walk and walk without no end, without no goal. This is the problem here, you know.
Exactly.
You have no goal of these kind of relationships.
So, before we get into another perspective, let's go and listen to something.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
So this is Youth Station. Still, we're talking about the unwanted pregnancies and the thing that happens in the future for the girls and, of course, for the child. Because in most of the times, boys are not going to share any responsibility for the child that
yeah.
is going to be created.
So from another perspective, let's go through this topic of wanted pregnancy. You know,
yeah.
there are some countries, you know, with somehow warm weather or which, you know, makes this puberty.
You mean that the environment is going to affect the kids,
exactly,
the children.
Age of
the,
puberty.
Yeah, yeah. And
in
they get
that region.
Their puberty before the specific age that has been mentioned for them.
Exactly. And I think in this kind of situation, we have to, you know, provide them with these kind of facilities, this kind of information, knowledge, education about this matter of marriage.
Yeah. So
you
even
know?
If the youngsters with so young of an age,
mm-hmm.
in the age of 15 or 16, they want and they full-heartedly will to create a life, have this will to create a life, it's okay. And the families actually should talk to them.
And protect
and
them.
And also protect them and back them up in the future. Because we have seen it sometimes, even in these young ages, they can start a family and even very much successful families.
Exactly. And let me tell you something. You know, I think this education, the family should, you know, teach you is really important. Because my mother told me something really interesting that she never told me. She told me that when I gave birth to you, it was like I felt a huge burden on my shoulder.
Yeah.
Suddenly I realized that I have a baby.
Yes, and of course it means a burden. Lot. Yeah, it means a lot.
You know, and you know, I think you have to be ready for this meeting.
Exactly.
And there's responsibility before it happens.
Yeah, so the age does matter, your knowledge matter, and your partner matters a
lot.
Family,
protection.
The families who have single parent are suffering too much of terribles and problems, so we cannot say that the child is going to come out of a, whatever, I don't want just to say it, a one-night stand or just an unwanted relationship, a thing that you never thought is going to go that far away.
Yeah.
The child that is going to be created out of these relationships is a human being, and they need to have a family, but they're not going to have it, and they're going to live a miserable life.
And also, the statistics just tell us the children who are unwanted, you know, they are from unwanted pregnancy or so on, they are going through the addiction,
drugs, that's very true.
Alcohol,
and mental issues, because it is pretty much logical. You can justify the point because it's very clear when you have no family, when you have no father, no mother, and no
and you
siblings.
Feel always unwanted in your life.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
So it is, I guess, the main responsibility goes for the government, for the educational system, to teach actually the children, the girls and the boys, both of them, they need to be aware of their situation, of their relationship, of the friendships they make.
Yeah.
And of course, they must be aware of the consequences, and they should know that it's not just a relationship.
And again, here I think religion is doing an important job, an important role, which is actually doing well. You know, we see that in Islamic countries, we are not facing that much with these kind of problems.
Yeah, morality is very important because it keeps you in border. And when you have borders, you might never get into troubles.
And also, me as a girl, I have my own special red lines in relationships. I don't avoid them.
Very
I don't
true.
Avoid some day-to-day, I don't know, relation that I have to have, you know, I don't know. University, at work, somewhere.
Everywhere, yeah.
Yeah.
The girls are more prone to troubles and dilemmas and problems because, you know, they are more responsible and they can feel the burden.
And because of that, I have my own special red lines.
Yeah.
And I think every girl should identify and, I don't know, recognize these kind of red lines for themselves.
Should have should recognize a personality of her own and then understand that she is the one who's going to actually define their relationships. So that's all. The responsibility goes for all the people around us. The parents, the educational
system,
the government. And also for those who teach morality to other people. You know, morality is not just about some special rituals that we do. No, it's more than that. If you have a great connection with your Lord, if you ask Him help in every single step of your life, then everything is going to be pretty much easier.
Yeah, exactly. And just we have to work on our self-control in any field of life.
Yeah, that is very true. And thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. May Allah protect you with His never-sleeping eyes.
Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
In California, at least 19 people have died as the storms continue to batter the region, leading to widespread flooding, mudslides, and power outages. The National Weather Service says large portions of Central California have received over half of their annual normal precipitation in just the past 2 weeks, and more rain incoming. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says 34 million Californians are under a flood watch. Despite the devastating impacts, few media outlets have drawn a connection between the historic weather and human-induced climate change. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Truth Out wrote in this regard, a new report reveals the devastating cost of extreme weather events in the United States last year, with 18 events resulting in costs over $1 billion each and hundreds of lives lost. In total, 474 people in the U.S. died in 2022 due to those 18 weather events, according to a report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA. Last year placed third for the highest number of disasters recorded in a calendar year, NOAA said on its website. The 2 years that saw a higher number of billion-dollar weather events were both recent. In 2021, there were 20 such events, and in 2020, there were 22. Though previous years have had a greater number of billion-dollar extreme weather events, 2022 was more costly. Damages from these disasters totaled approximately $165 billion for all 18 events, NOAA said, noting that in the year prior, the total cost was $155.3 billion. The severe weather events included hurricanes, flooding, winter storms, tornadoes, droughts, and more. Hurricane Ian was the most expensive of the 18 events in NOAA's report, costing $112.9 billion, the third most expensive hurricane since the agency started recording costs in 1980. Over the past 7 years, NOAA noted there have been over 122 separate billion-dollar weather-related disasters, with financial costs exceeding $1 trillion total. At least 5,000 people died as a result of these disasters. Although the report doesn't mention climate change, scientists from NOAA have said that the climate crisis is responsible for the increase in extreme weather events in the U.S. and around the world. The frequency and severity of extreme climate events continue to increase, NOAA Administrator Rick Spinard said on Twitter, adding, "Today's stats underscore why we must build our resiliency to these costly events and become a climate-ready nation." In an email to Truth Out, NOAA applied climatologist Adam Smith confirmed that the rise in extreme weather events is the result of climate crisis. Climate change is supercharging the increasing frequency and intensity of certain types of extreme weather that lead to billion-dollar disasters, most notably the rise in vulnerability to drought, lengthening wildfire seasons in western United States, and the potential for extremely heavy rainfall becoming more common in the eastern states. Smith said, "Given all these compounding hazard risks, there is an increased need to focus on where we build, how we build, and investing in infrastructure updates that are designed for 21st century climates." Other organizations and experts noted that becoming climate ready isn't enough. To lessen the frequency and severity of these events, the U.S. and other wealthy nations must act to reduce emissions. To curtail the worst climate and extreme weather disasters, major emitting nations must take drastic actions to rein in global warming emissions, a statement from the Union of Concerned Statistics said. Policymakers must also invest equitably in climate adaptation measures. Rachel Klotas, the Policy Director for Climate and Energy Program for the Union of Concerned Scientists, told NPR, "This sobering data paints a dire picture of how woefully unprepared the United States is to cope with the mounting climate crisis and its intersection with other socioeconomic challenges in people's daily lives. Rather than responding in a one-off manner to disasters within the U.S., Congress should implement a comprehensive national climate resilience strategy commensurate with the harm and risks we are already facing in the U.S. According to recent reports, in California, at least 19 people have died as the storms continue to batter the region, leading to widespread flooding, mudslides, and power outages. Thousands of residents have been ordered to evacuate in some areas, including parts of Santa Barbara and Monterey County. 5 million people in California remain under a flood watch. The National Weather Service says large portions of Central California have received over half their annual normal precipitation in just the past 2 weeks, and more rain is coming. Santa Cruz County Supervisor Zach Friend has described the storms as a, quote, "once in a generational challenging event." In San Miguel, California, the National Guard has joined in the effort to find a 5-year boy named Kyle Doan, who was swept away by the flood waters recently. Meteorologists say California is being hit with what's known as an atmospheric river of rain, which has unleashed unrelenting storms. Meanwhile, Media Matters reports national TV news in largely ignoring the link between climate change and the deluge devastating California. The group looked at 60 segments that aired on national TV news networks between December 31st and January 4th. Only one mentioned climate change. To talk more about the storms in California, Daniel Swain, climate scientist at UCLA, said that the Media Matters reports national TV news is largely ignoring the link between climate change and the deluge devastating the U.S. state of California.
This is the show A to Z. For today's program, Brother Muhammad is going to talk to us about Islamic education. Stay tuned.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's discussion with regards to Islamic education, we would like to look at an important aspect of the Islamic identity, and that is the performance of Salah. The 5 daily prayers and the other prayers that are called Salah are an important aspect of the child's upbringing, and the parents are the foremost individuals responsible for educating and nurturing Salah into the lives of the children. Indeed, Salah can be nurtured through different ways, like verbal and practical methods, like verbal reminders and practical demonstrations. But on the other hand, when the process of nurturing and education takes place, alongside there should be another process that goes forward, and that is the process of evaluation and assessment. The parents and other educators who are responsible for training the children and educating them in Salah need to take the time and have processes in place to test and evaluate the state at which the children's prayer is at. And indeed, through this method, they shall be able to rectify the issues in their own teaching and education style and methods and assist the children in filling in the gaps wherever possible. We find this to be a very important strategy from within the lifestyle of the Holy Prophet and the Imams themselves. As we find from the seerah of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi, that one day he prayed salah loudly, and thereafter salah, he turned to his companions and he asked them, "Did I miss out anything when I was reciting?" And the companions at that time were silent. And Rasulullah asked again, "Is Ubay ibn Ka'b amongst you?" Then he came forward. Ubay ibn Ka'b came forward and they said, "Yes, indeed, he is." Then Rasulullah asked him, as we know, Ubay ibn Ka'b is one of those individuals who was responsible for the recording of the Qur'an, or writing down and inscribing of the Qur'an. And thereafter, he was also one of those who helped in compilation of the Holy Qur'an. So this person came forward and said, he came forward and Rasulullah asked him, "Did I miss anything? Did I purposely not recite any parts?" And he said, "Yes, indeed, Rasulullah." And he narrated, he collected all those points and he presented to Rasulullah. And Rasulullah at that time got upset with his companions and he said, "What is your state, O my companions, that the Book of Allah is recited upon you and you're not aware and you're not focused on what words are being recited and what words have been lost from that recitation?" And he said the people, the Banu Israel, were likewise, they actually perished because of this attitude of theirs, that their bodies were present at the time of recitation, but their hearts were absent. And Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala does not accept the salah of a servant who prays without the presence of the heart. So again, indeed, we find that Rasulullah in this seerah, obviously this salah, we realize it was probably a test, not really the proper salah, otherwise Rasulullah would not necessarily pray in such a way. But he tested his companions through reciting salah and the different aspects of the salah in a way that he purposely left out aspects of it for the purpose of evaluating the focus and attention of the companions when it came to salah. And this clearly showed, as adults, not only the companions were not focused, they did not even realize that there were aspects of the Quran that were left out. Likewise, Rasulullah and the other infallible imams would take the time and evaluate the salah of their companions, such as Imam al-Sadiq as well. In one of the narrations we find, he asked his companion, a very close companion, Hammad, to stand and pray salah. He asked him, "Can you pray a good 2 rakat salah? Can you pray salah properly? Can you pray salah well?" He said, "I know the book of salah, which has all the details of the salah by heart. I have memorized it." And that is when Imam asked him to stand and pray. And when he completed his prayer, Imam told him, "Hammad, you cannot pray a salat properly." And he said, "It is very inappropriate for a Muslim that he should reach the age of 60 to 70 and not be able to pray salat with its perfect etiquettes and conditions." And this is when Hammad asked Imam to teach him how to pray the Salat with full etiquette. I hope you enjoy today's discussion. Until next time, fi amanillah, under God's protection.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
In the limelight.
The U.S. Senate has recently passed legislation authorizing a record $858 billion in annual defense spending, $45 billion more than proposed by President Joe Biden. This is while the GOP is blocking $12 billion to fight child poverty. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The website of Common Dreams wrote in this regard, Congressional Republicans happily teamed up with Democrats to authorize $858 billion in military spending for the next fiscal year. But the GOP is refusing to even consider proposals to revive the child tax credit expansion that lifted millions of kids out of poverty last year, even though bringing the program back would cost a fraction of the Pentagon outlay. A spokesperson for Senate Finance Committee Chair Ron Wyden told Huffington Post earlier this week that Republicans have thus far been unwilling to negotiate over the Child Tax Credit, CTC boost, which they unanimously opposed when it was enacted as part of the American Rescue Plan last year. Republicans have refused to engage at all on the Child Tax Credit, said Ashley Shapdale. In fact, they made clear they would not negotiate on any deal that includes the child tax credit, she added. Leading Republicans readily confirmed their refusal to consider the CTC boost as part of an end-of-year tax package. With the 60-vote Senate filibuster intact, Democrats need the support of at least 10 Republicans to revive the expanded CTC in some form. As of right now, there is no support for that on the Republican side, Senator Mike Crapo, the top Republican on the Senate Finance Committee, told HuffPost. Republican Kevin Brady, one of 176 House Republicans who voted in favor of $858 billion National Defense Authorization Act last week, declared that the country frankly doesn't have the time or the money for the partisan, expensive provisions such as the child tax credit. The 2021 program, which expanded the existing CTC to include the poorest families and sent out payments of up to $3,600 per child in monthly increments, spared a historic drop in the obscenely high U.S. child poverty rate before it expired at the end of last year, thanks to Senator Joe Manchin and GOP opposition to extending the benefit. The boosted CTC's expiration has pushed millions of children back into poverty across the U.S. and caused a significant jump in hunger, heightening the sense of urgency among campaigners and many Democratic lawmakers seeking to reinstate the program. The expanded child tax credit reduced child poverty by more than 40%. It cut child hunger by a third, said the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Working-class families need this relief now, and Congress has a chance to bring it back before the end of the year. Progressives will keep fighting to get this done. In an attempt to jumpstart negotiations, Democrats have said they would be willing to entertain a slate of corporate tax cuts that the GOP wants to enact before the end of the year. But even the prospect of delivering another major windfall to large companies hasn't proved sufficiently enticing for Republicans to suspend their long-standing opposition to government anti-poverty programs. Congressional Democrats and the Biden White House have also suggested they would accept a more limited version of the 2021 CTC boost, potentially including more strict work requirements and other eligibility limits, which progressives oppose. Such concessions have apparently failed to sway Republicans. Following the lapse of the expanded program in December 2021, the CTC reverted back to its previous form, which includes smaller payments and a regressive phase-in that prevents the poorest families from obtaining the benefit. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, CBPP, estimates that eliminating the phase-in and allowing low-income families that are ineligible under current law to receive the full CTC benefit would cost roughly $12 billion a year. By comparison, the House and Senate voted this month to increase U.S. military spending by $90 billion over fiscal year 2022 levels. This isn't using our taxpayer dollars wisely. It's robbing programs that we need, like the discontinued child tax credit expansion that cut child poverty by half. Lindsay Kashagarian, director of the National Priorities Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, wrote in a recent blog post, adding, "The only winners here are military contractors who commandeer roughly half of the Pentagon's budget in any given year. Congress has until next week to approve a funding package to avert a government shutdown, meaning time is running out for a last-ditch CTC push." The stakes are massive. As CBPP noted earlier this month, without an expansion of the child tax credit and with the expiration of various other relief measures, child poverty is likely to return to about the same level as it was pre-pandemic, pushing millions of children back into poverty. Policymakers can expand the child tax credit or they can fail to act and see the rescue plan's historic gains against child poverty evaporate, the think tank warned. Senator Jeff Merkley said recently that he is fighting to get the expanded child tax credit passed before the end of the year. It reduced the child poverty and helped families make ends meet, the senator added, saying, "We must get it done."
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba vujood ghodde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Men and women as human beings are completely equal in Islam. This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, meeting with hundreds of prominent Iranian women in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on January 4, 2023. There is a verse in the Holy Quran that states, "Indeed, the Muslim men and the Muslim women, the faithful men and the faithful women, the obedient men and the obedient women, the truthful men and the truthful women, the patient men and the patient women, humble men and the humble women, the charitable men and the charitable women, the men who fast and the women who fast, the men who guard their private parts and the women who guard, the men who remember Allah greatly, and the women who remember Allah greatly. Allah holds in store for them forgiveness and a great reward." The Holy Quran, chapter 33, ayah 35. This is Islam's view.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Or another ayah, God states, "I do not waste the work of any worker among you, whether male or female." The Holy Quran, chapter 3, ayah 195. There is no difference between them. That is, there is no difference between men and women in terms of human and Islamic values. Islam views men and women as human beings. Neither one is more favored than the other. Of course, the duties of men and women are different, but there is a balance. There is a holy law mentioned in the Quran in Surah Al-Baqarah that states, "And women have a right similar to those of men over them, in accordance with Islamic law." This is mentioned in the Holy Quran, chapter 2, ayah 228. They have the same number of rights over men as men have rights over them. Something belongs to them, and proportionately something else belongs to the other party, which is their duty and responsibility. So when a duty is assigned to someone, they have a right in return for it. For every privilege that is given to the either side, there is a responsibility. There is a complete balance that is about the rights of men and women. Therefore, they do not have the same rights and duties, but it is balanced.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The filter attached to a dialysis machine is not a weapon. It is not a detonator for a bomb or any device that would be deemed dangerous. It is used to cleanse the blood of patients suffering from chronic kidney disease. So why is this life-saving equipment being blocked from entering Yemen? We attended a press conference held by Yemen's Ministry of Health in Sana'a, where it was declared that the Saudi-imposed blockade is causing a national health crisis by preventing entry of medicines and equipment for kidney failure patients. In the absence of dialysis treatment, approximately 5,000 patients on dialysis are at risk of dying, according to the health ministry.
The Saudi-led coalition targeted the health and medical sector from the very beginning of the war by directly destroying medical facilities, centers, hospitals, and medicine warehouses, and by imposing a blockade on every aspect of life through this siege that is being backed by America in order to control the country's health system.
Kaid Ahmed is one of the patients on dialysis, who is currently getting treatment at Athoda Hospital. He said the lack of supplies has prevented him and other patients from receiving the required number of dialysis treatments per week.
We cannot eat much because we are only receiving two dialysis treatments a week instead of the required three treatments. As a result, we can only eat a bare minimum food.
But getting the required three treatments per week for Gayed and the other 5,000 patients like him is a near impossible task these days. This mixed solution, which is used to operate the dialysis machine, is in very short supply. There's only enough for two more weeks.
It's gotten so bad that we have to close down this section simply because we do not have enough supplies to run all of the dialysis machines. If we open this section, we would have no more supplies to treat patients. We've had to make emergency requests to other dialysis clinics to provide us with such equipment. By the end of January, we will be forced to close down because we'll have no more supplies to operate.
Unless the kidney disease center at Athoda Hospital is supplied with dialysis filters and the solution needed to operate dialysis machines, they will be forced to shut down by the end of January. If that happens, the lives of approximately 5,000 patients will be at risk. The Yemeni army has repeatedly warned that if the Saudi-imposed blockade is not lifted, it would be forced to take military action. The siege must be ended so that much-needed medicine and other essential supplies can enter the country. Yusuf Maudi, Sana'a.
Stockholm's government has just taken over the rotating presidency of the European Union. It holds the position for the next 6 months and faces many challenges. Amid the conflict in Ukraine, the powers that be in Moscow have been singled out.
This is the peaceful order that the Putin regime now seeks to destroy. But we will defend it here and in Ukraine and everywhere.
Many analysts say the EU has shot itself in the foot by provoking and isolating Russia at Washington's behest. Accommodation, food and energy prices remain extremely high in the EU. The European Parliament has just published results of a survey which shows cost of living is the number one concern for citizens.
Of course, I'm looking to go in and buy my own house at the moment. That's a bit difficult to decide. Is it a good time? Is it not a good time?
Is the reliance on food banks is shocking. Even for people in full-time employment, like police officers, teachers.
For instance, Brussels, I think, is the city of trainees, of interns who try to start your career. And, for instance,